board, and I apologize for the late start. But we'll move along as quickly as we can without compromising anything. And we'll begin with introductions. It's always good for us to know who all is here, and for anyone who may or may not know all of us, to know who we are. As I said, I'm Barbara Walker, and we'll go around toward my left.
I'm Bob Burns from Omaha.
Mel Rester, Lincoln.
Pearl Van Zandt, Director of the Commission, Lincoln. Do you want to go on to the audience?
No, we can go back around the other side of the table and then go out.
Okay. Jan Ludwig.
Go ahead.
Maya Sams from Omaha.
And I'm Dorothy Westenyaki from South Sioux City, Nebraska.
Okay.
Bob, would you introduce?
Sure. Bob, Deputy Director of the Commission. Carlos Servan, Deputy Director of DR, Commission for the Mind.
My name is John Fullerton. I'm Executive Director of Radio Talking Book Services.
Nick Slab, Radio Talking Books.
I'm Ruth Paskey, and I'm one who uses Radio Talking Books.
I'm James Van, and I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm here as a chair of the RTBN board and also a member of the American Council of the Blind of Nebraska.
And back to Steve.
Steve Spiker, ACB Nebraska Vice President and lawyer in private practice.
And also Vice President of the American Council of Blind, Vice President of the National Organization. We have a Vice President.
Oh.
More congratulations.
I'm Bill Brown. I'm the Business Manager for the Commission.
Michael Floyd, Director of the Education Center in Lincoln.
Michael Floyd, Vice President of the National Federation of Blind in Nebraska.
Sahar Hussaini, staff
James Warren, staff trainee.
Mary Lou, staff trainee.
Okay, well, welcome everybody. One of the things that we have decided to do at the beginning of each of our meetings is to let people know about public comments situation. For the most part, we have decided to leave the openness as far as people commenting at any time during the meeting up to the discretion of the chairman. We always do have specific time for public comments, but we want people to know that if for some reason you need to leave and you wanted to say something and we hadn't gotten to the place where that was ready to happen, please let me know. Don't let the rest of the world know, to let me know sometime somewhere. Please let me know directly that you want to do that, and I'll find a way to make that happen. We don't want to leave anybody out as far as comments go. We do always have a very full agenda, and so we are trying to strike a balance on making sure that we are open to comments, but also that our meetings don't last forever and ever. So if you'll help us to work on that by, when you do have something to say and we do give you the floor, making it brief, that will definitely help all of us, I think. Okay, the next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes of the May 19th meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to those minutes? They're now available to people on the Newsline Channel 2 and on the Commission's website, so we aren't reading them at meetings.
I move their acceptance.
Second.
Is there discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, those minutes are approved. We also have the telephone conference meeting minutes for June 13th. I believe that those minutes don't show that they're for June 13th. The version that I've seen around didn't say that anyway. So we'll want to make sure that is noted on them. Otherwise, Are there additions or corrections to those minutes? Or is there a motion for approval?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that the June 13th minutes be approved with the date on them. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. We have taken care of those items. The next item on the agenda is the field operations overview. And Pearl, would you want to?
Yes. I'd like to introduce Carlos Nervan and Bob Deaton. They introduced themselves a moment ago. They will be presenting to you about our field operations. And we'll just kind of turn it over to them, and then they're open to any questions that you might have.
Well, my name is Carlos Nervan. I'm the Deputy Director for Vocational Rehabilitation Services, and I do not supervise the orientation center or the vending enterprise program. As you recall, both programs came to report to you before. The program that I work with has to deal a lot with working with those two programs. So if I mention a BEP or orientation center, you know why, because clients while under training at the orientation center or the vending enterprise program are clients of VR. Also, both income covers for the supported employment under the Rehab Act, that's also under VR services, but he supervises, he is the expert on that. And he will be talking more about what he does. As I prepare myself to report to you, I was thinking what is the best way to make it sense, because there are so many things that our counselors do in the field. Basically, what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you the structure of the supervisors and of each district area. I'm also going to go over the statuses that we provide, but I'm not going to use numbers or try to confuse you. So I'm going to try to make it as friendly as I can. If you have questions, you can stop me when I'm talking, or you can ask me by the end. We have three district areas, Omaha, which covers Omaha, and also North Fork, Lincoln, which covers all this Lincoln area, and some going down to the freeway, I think it's above freeway 2. We have North Platte, which covers all the way from Kearney, I think, to the Panhandle, a little over east of Kearney as well. Now, our counselors provide VR services, but some of them also provide what we call it orientation and mobility counseling or home teaching. Due to the area in which they serve, let's assume that somebody has three rehab clients in one area and there is one who needs independent living or home teaching. Well, that particular counselor will provide services to that independent living client because it's already there. Why to wait to the next appointment to the home teacher or the orientation counselor to come around? And that gives you an idea that our counselors are prepared to provide that type of training all over. As we learned before, they do come to our center training for at least 3 months. Now, the way how we get clients, how we get clients on the referral status, either doctors, ophthalmologists, or sometimes the public school, sometimes family, friends, but most of them are doctors. We also get a referral from the Social Security Administration. However, most of the referrals from the Social Security Administration are already in our case law. And the referral status, we have 60 days to check with that person and see if that person wants to apply. Now, once they want to apply, we call it the applicant status, in which we are supposed to make some kind of decision within the next 60 days as well. I'm sorry, let me go back to the referral status. Referral status, we only have 30 days. Okay? The acceptance, the application is 60 days, time that we have to provide some kind of decision. In this status, we consider applications, either someone who fill out a formal application, sometimes with a counselor. That's the most usual type of application that we receive. But it can also be via email. If somebody calls on the phone and says, I want to become a client, that doesn't necessarily mean that that person fill out an application, but according to the Rehab Act, that person is considered already being applying for the 60 days period that we're supposed to make a determination. Then we have either acceptance or we don't accept it before acceptance, because some people apply and we learn that they don't qualify for our services, either because they are not blind or legally blind or functionally blind, or they don't have a vocational goal, either employment goal or being a homemaker. And some of them who don't qualify are also those who sometimes don't want to do anything with us. Some of them think that they want something with us, but they don't want services by the end anyways. So that's the part that we close them before acceptance. Now we come next to the acceptance status, in which we accept them, and then we make an appointment for the IPE, the Individualized Plan for Employment. Now let me go back a little bit to the closure before acceptance. Each time we close somebody, and I'm going to be repeating this because this is what we tell our clients to, we always advise them about their appealing rights. We talk to them about CAP, Client Assistance Program. We talk to them about the administrative review, the mediation rights, and their overall appealing rights. And we provide them the phone numbers and the brochures and information according to the media they wanted, either Braille, large screen, cassette tape, and many people wanted internet or via email. Now going back to the IPE, this is the main section of our program. The Vocational Rehab Act spends a lot of time explaining what we are supposed to do with the Individualized Plan for Employment. Some of you will recall that it used to be called Individualized Written Rehabilitation Plan. The Congress was thinking of cutting down basically rehab services in general, and the argument was because we were not doing our jobs, meaning we were not placing people. So they want to send the message that the main focus of rehab, vocational rehab, is employment. Therefore, they changed this particular name within the Rehab Act and they call it Individualized Plan for Employment. Now, that doesn't mean that we are not going to provide services to those who have a vocational goal as a homemaker. But if you notice again, the main focus here is employment. One of the other changes that happens here, and I'm just going to go very quick about this change so I can explain myself better when I go about what we do, is that at the beginning of the plan, we were not required to put down when they are going to be working, or when are they going to be achieving their employment goal. It used to be, okay, open a case and eventually we will know how you are going. But now the Rehab Act is telling us and clients, in the beginning, you have to put down when you are expecting to be working. So that keeps a frame mind that clients need to start thinking about really work and that they are going to be working one day, and us also, that we need to be focused on those dates and achieve that goal. The other major change of the Rehabilitation Act is informed choice, and that's basically brought up by consumer organizations. And informed choice is not that we think people have the right to choose whatever they want, but we are supposed to inform clients what kind of services, what kind of different avenues are out there, so they can make better decisions about their choices. Now with that, let me explain you what we do here. In this plan, we either put clients on training status, which we are going to provide alternative techniques, training for blind clients in order to be ready for the rest of their training, which can be either in their employment or vocational goal or going to college. The other part of the plan for some people is counseling and guidance, and the other one is physical restoration. So we provide those three. Sometimes we do physical restoration, sometimes, and a lot of times we do counseling and guidance because it has to deal with the individualized plan for employment throughout the program anyway. Once again, we do pay tuition and fees and books. We provide clients some counseling about how to use their readers. We make assessment to see how clients what clients want to work, what kind of jobs they want according to their interests, potentials, and informed choices, and so on. Now, one of the jobs that we really do is we try to identify the potential of clients, because many times they come and they will say, well, you know, I became blind, or I grew up blind, and I don't know what blind people can do. It would be easier for a counselor to say, well, maybe just do something that would be easier for us to train you on, and easier for us, and faster for us to get a 26 or a successful closure. No, our main job is to identify the client's potential. So if we know that that client could be trained and have much more potential, we will do it. We will invest on them. Now, sometimes we don't know, but we are going to inform clients about other clients who thought like they did, she or he did. So they will start thinking in broader aspects. They will start thinking about that they can do more things. We are going to bring them to meet engineers, doctors, teachers, assembly people, and so on. So they can really make a better decision what they want to do. One of the things that we do with clients who become blind and they have some work experience already, we tell them, if you were not blind, what would you like to be? And they usually want to go back to the job that they were doing before, or maybe with some more support and education, they want to get into the same area, but in a better kind of job, maybe supervisor or something. And many times they say, but because I'm blind, I don't think I can do it. And we said, no, let's work on it. You have already the experience, you have already the skill on that. All you need is just get confidence, build your self-esteem, and get a training, get the skills. So that's what we try to do a lot, and we have a lot of successful stories that I could tell you, but I know we are running out of time. For those who, once again, are not going to college, we provide the assessment, we provide some training. And at this point, I would like to talk to you about when they are ready for employment. When they get all the training, there is a status called ready for employment, in which we start looking for jobs. Now, don't think that we are waiting until the client is ready to be employed to start looking for jobs. Since 1998, as I understand, since Pro became director and the new Rehab Act amendment, the agency is putting a lot of emphasis on placement. So we brought consultants to talk to us about job development, how to go aggressively in doing job development and placement. So our counselors and supervisors are constantly, and even the center, they're constantly doing job development, thinking ways how to build relationships with employers, either private or public, the public sector. We started several types of projects in which we have internships, or OJTs, or on the job training. We have some agreement with the Lincoln City now because we were able to get our voice heard over there, and they are thinking of getting more, to hire more blind people. As I understand, there's only one blind person hired there, and he's here, if I'm not mistaken. But we want blind people to be working where they want to work according to their potentials and interests, not where there is a first available job and maybe it's just some kind of repetitious kind of job. Now, nothing wrong with that, but we want clients to make a choice. And we are here to provide that kind of training and that kind of support. I was talking to you about different projects and different type of things that we are doing on job development. Each district approach a little different, the way how they do the job development. I'm not going to mention what each district do, but I'm going to mention in general what they do and combine under the agency reporting general. are developing, or we have developed a PowerPoint presentation. Now, I thought I could bring that to you here, but that's, you're going to be listening to me anyways and not watching to the PowerPoint or looking at the PowerPoint. So I rather save time and just tell you what we have there. A combination of counselors, supervisors, and our tech people put together a PowerPoint presentation in which we have blind people, successful blind people, and some of them are in this room, working in their own jobs, either public or private sector, doing their jobs. So we have these people, we brought these people to new employers to take a look at how they do their jobs and talk to them about the potential of blind people, and that we, the Commission for the Blind, we provide ongoing support, either counseling, finding ways that the employers can feel much more confident hiring hiring blind people, because many times they say, yeah, I think blind people can work, but we don't have expertise on blindness. I don't know where to get the equipment. I don't know where to get the readers. I don't know how to train this person. How about if something wrong happens? How about if the dog gets sick? Or how about if he or she breaks her cane or transportation? Now, they don't tell us those things, but they know that question is in the back of their minds. So we approach them and talk to them about that, and that we will train them on those situations. In the case of internships or OJTs, we will provide the equipment, and we will try to build that relationship, so eventually the employers will buy the equipment. And we have some successful stories about that too, in which we purchased the equipment in the beginning, then when the employer realized that the clients can do their jobs, and it's going to be an investment value for them for different reasons, they say, oh no, we will buy the equipment, we will do it. So we take the equipment back to another client. Sometimes they don't give us the equipment back, but they will hire more blind people, and they will purchase the equipment, okay? So it's a matter of building relationships, and we are working on that on ongoing basis. Now, going back to the ready for employment, at that time, clients start going out, getting applications, of course. Counselors provide the support, the encouragement that they need in order to keep going there, find the kind of jobs that they want. Many times they only start with an intern kind of jobs, like many of us will do, or like many people will do. Just start from the beginning and then move up according to the environment in which they are getting. I think that's all for ready for employment. Now, once they are placed, once again, according to the Rehab Act, at least we have to keep the case open for another 90 days. And what we call this is like more like a follow-up, making sure that there are all the things in place for the client, that the employer is satisfied, or to predict any concerns that the employer may have, to fix equipment if necessary, to maybe arrange transportation in the beginning until they feel more confident or they learn all the skills. 90 days. Once again, it's at least 90 days. It's not at the most 90 days, but at least 90 days. In which we do the follow-up and then we close them successful, and that's what we really get our numbers for. Once again, here in this kind of closures, we tell them about their rights. And one of them is that if they need any more training or support from us, they can always call us and we will open their case as post-employment and provide services, and then we'll close them back again. We also have those who we call it unsuccessful closures. Now, many times unsuccessful doesn't necessarily mean unsuccessful, but that's what the feds use. And I say many times they don't mean unsuccessful because sometimes they move out of the country. Let's assume that somebody is ready for employment and they say, well, I'm tired of the cold and the humidity in Nebraska, I want to go to Arizona. And so they go to Arizona and they don't want our services, they want services from the agency down there because they know the system over there, they know the employers over there, so they want to place them. Now, we always try to work with the agency, and many times across the state we do have good relationship with agencies, and we are able to keep the case open until they find a job, and then we close them, because those state agencies know that sometimes their client will be coming here and we will do the same for them. But sometimes states want to take credit, and that's okay with us, because overall it's a federal program. Overall they are Americans, citizens, or residents. And the whole purpose of the Rehab Act is to put them to work. So we close them unsuccessful, and eventually they get a job over there in another state. And once again, in our documents, look unsuccessful, but we put them that they move to another state. So hopefully, in the federal reports, they are not necessarily unsuccessful, but for statistics purposes for our state, so far they are reported as unsuccessful. The other unsuccessful type of closures are those who refuse to cooperate. We want to have them some interviews, appointments, or build their skills. And sometimes they just stop talking to us. They move, they don't tell us where they are. We have no idea where they are. And you cannot find them. So you have to close them. Some people just move and don't tell you what to move, like I'm telling you. I think that's overall what I can tell you about the services that we provide in general. Once again, it's focused on employment. In regards to homemakers, we do have homemakers. We provide them a lot of home teaching at home. Then once they reach their goal of being homemakers independent at home, that's okay. One of the reasons why we are very proud in Nebraska is because work ethics in Nebraska is very high. So we have some homemakers who started with the homemaker goal. Maybe they are 60, 70 years old. And once they have their confidence built and their skills learned, they realize that they want to go back to work. And so we have some successful closures under employment who are over 70 years old. We got a guy who was 92 years old. So it's inspiring. It's great to know those things. Now, to talk all about employment and why we have to focus on employment, the federal government is a lot, again, putting a lot of pressure on results. In the past, there were not a mechanism in which agencies for the blind in general will report real successful closures, meaning the blind people who are really blind, meaning legally or functionally blind, getting good jobs. Many agencies will just have physical restoration, or maybe the first available job just closed that case. But now the federal government got some new standards and indicators in which they are going to be measuring how many clients who are blind or legally blind who qualify for the Rehab Act services are employed, and they are expecting that we fulfill their concerns, their requirements, because they are asking us that they're asking us that we have to fill a certain percentage of our placements are supposed to get at least minimum wage or more. We are supposed to compare each year and get at least one more competitive employment and more. And competitive employment now means no shelter workshop, now means more than or at least minimum wage, means at least 32 hours of employment per week. So that's competitive employment these days. In the past, it used to be maybe you work part-time wherever and you only make an hour a week, and that would be still successful. The feds are changing that. Now, let me talk to you about a couple of main standards and indicators that we were able to work on and compare for the last year, because they told us that the 99 standards and indicators, they have some statistics, but then we realized that in order to have the 99 statistics, they need to use the numbers from 98. So basically we have to use 2 years, 98 and 99 statistics, and then we get a number, and they call it the 99 report, okay? So now what we are trying to do is get a 99 statistics and year 2000 statistics to get our 2000 year report. The 2001 report won't be done yet until October of this year. Not only October of this year, but the fiscal year for the federal ends on October of this year. And then it takes a while to get all the numbers officially back. So let me tell you a couple of statistics. Well, the first one is very easy. which the feds are saying you have to have closures of 89%, at least 89% who are severe disabled, meaning in our case we had to serve blind people, not just those who come with trying to get a glass or glasses, but blind people, okay? And we have 100%, so that's not a problem. Now let me go to employment, which is quality employment, like I told you, at least minimum wage or more, and full time or 32 hours or more. For the year 98 and 99, okay, the requirement is that we have employment, we need to have at least 68.9%. For the year 98-99, which is 99 basically, we got 69.3%. You heard that report before, but I'm just trying to tell you because the new ones for the year 2000, or the comparison between 99 and 2000, we got 76.3%. So we improved it. And those are the main statistics that we were able to get. The other ones is we need to start comparing how much money our clients are making according to the Nebraska living standards, meaning what do the average population makes, and we blind people are supposed to start making at least a little lower than that for now, but because we expect in the future that we should be considered like any other sighted person. But we are not able to get that calculation yet because we need to be able to have a system in place in which the feds can give us those reports. But we don't have those statistics from 1999. The new 9/11, which is the form that we report every year, will have those statistics. I mean, that system in place in which we can get the report. But that's not going to be in place until October of this year. So for now, we are not able to do it, but we are going to work on that with the feds eventually and with the state. With that, I think I get my time and I will be here for the rest of the morning.
Carlos, I have a couple questions.
Yes.
With the homemaker issue, independent living versus vocational rehab services, it would seem like if a person's aspiration is just to be a homemaker, that the independent living route might be sufficient. How does that thinking go? I mean, versus if a person's going to do, like, go through the center maybe for the full 9 months, if their aspiration is only to be a homemaker, versus just, you know, using the independent living goal, and basically need probably less intensive training. How is it decided if a person's goal is just to be a homemaker, that they should be eligible for vocational rehabilitation versus just the independent living?
Well, I think I'm going to try to be as sincere as I can, because in reality, we get more funds from the federal government for VR, for homemaking cases. We don't have as much as IL money that we want to have. Now, the main difference, I would say, that for independent living clients, sometimes they just want a little training, okay? Maybe once a week, they just want to just to work on the kitchen, that's all, because they know how to do other things. For a homemaker, they want more things. They want to come to the center, for instance, and in order to come to the center, they need to be a VR client. So that's one of the reasons why we moved the case. I think I would like Bob to explain about this, because we work together on this a lot.
Yeah, I agree with Carlos. It's a matter of involvement, and it's a matter of economics. Like the IL program, the total amount of funding that we get for Part B is $33,329 a year. And now that most of that is used to serve people under 55. The older blind program has a larger pot of money. We get $225,000 a year for that. But most of that is obligated to other things. The BIPS program, radio talking book, that sort of thing. In actuality, I think we have like about $40,000 to $45,000 to spend on client services. It's not a lot of money. And so if a person does have a need for extensive training, and their goal is home here, that is a recognized goal. You know, the RSA, the Rehab Services Administration, accept that as a goal on an individualized program for employment. And so it makes more sense to transfer that case to the VR caseload, where funding is much more able to meet, we have the fund to meet the individual needs of that person. Okay. If the need for services is at a lower level, maybe marking a few things in the kitchen, like Carlos was saying, or a few aids and devices, and a connection with the support group, then they're going to be independent living clients. Does that answer your question?
Well, so then I was kind of thinking that, you know, talking about Fed's expectations. I mean, you just answered part of it. You said the RSA says homemaking is an acceptable vocation, and so that answers that part. But then when you get into the income side, obviously, you know, that'll skew the income numbers.
Yeah. But I think I will try to explain very quick why is that, if I think I understand your question correctly. What happened is, in many states, unfortunately not here in Nebraska, but in many states, in most of the states, it was easier to get a homemaker closure, mm-hmm. because it was an obtainable vocational goal, even though it wasn't employment. So it was easier for agencies for the blind and for combined agencies just to tell somebody, oh yeah, you know, we can help you to be fine at home and get a closure in less than 6 months. So they will report a lot of successful closures, but not employment.
Yeah. So, I agree with that. Yeah. It's a system that invited abuse in the past. Now, you know, with the 98 amendments and the new standards and indicators, states are not going to be able to do that quite so well. We have to meet a minimum standard.
Correct.
As far as the substantial placement that represents substantial gainful employment. Otherwise, we could lose our funding. Certainly, we would be subject to some kind of discipline from the federal government.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of a built-in conflict if RSA recognizes homemaking as a viable aspiration, but then you have this other standard, competitive employment, meaning so many hours, the, you know, earning close to the Nebraska standard of living, that how those two, you know, will play out and balance against each other. Will there have to be a subcategory of where homemakers get fitted in so that they don't skew or are you saying, Bob, that no, they're not, and so we're going to have to be very reluctant to let people just do that.
I think you're touching on a debate that, in fact, is happening now. There was some discussion last year, probably before that too, that maybe homemakers should be discontinued as an acceptable goal in the same sense that extended employment has, or sheltered employment, same thing. So maybe we shouldn't be recognizing homemakers as an acceptable goal within that part of the Rehabilitation Act. What I anticipate and what I hope will happen is that Congress will appropriate more money for independent living. The Rehab Act actually is in several sections. You know, from time to time you'll hear basic support. Another term for that is Title I. Much of independent living is funded by Title VII of the Rehab Act, and like I say, the money allocated to that is not less. I suspect and I hope that what will happen in the future is that homemakers will be more money for that will allow us to do the kind of intensive training that some people need with homemaker goals. I really don't want to devalue the goal of homemakers. There are some people who are, you know, that is a very appropriate goal, and I think that needs to be respected. But at the present time, homemakers now, if they require intensive training, are in fact being served through basic support.
I have a question for Bob or Carlos. Now, if their goal is to be a homemaker, will they still receive like disability checks? Because say my daughter-in-law is a homemaker by choice. She don't get any income. And so if a blind person chooses to be a homemaker, why would they receive like an SSI check or SSDI check? So I know that's the goal of Voc Rehab, is to get people back to work so they're paying taxes instead of receiving money. So I mean, I guess I'm asking you, will, if their goal is to be a homemaker, will they still receive disability Social Security?
They will. According to their income, like Social Security disability, they will receive if they worked before. Mm-hmm. SSI, they may or may not according to their income.
That's
meaning
right.
If they are married, maybe the wife or the husband makes a lot of money, they are not going to receive checks. But what? SSDI, they will, as far as they don't work.
See, I can see where the controversy would be then over homemaker versus, you know, finding gainful employment. You know, like working 32 hours a week or more, at least at minimum wage. Am I saying, what am I saying is making sense to you guys?
No, it is. It's just that I hope you're not asking us to change that because it's not up to us.
No.
Just saying, we agree with you.
And Pearl, maybe at the director's level, when the state director is, you know, what Bob says, you know, makes a lot of sense. I mean, if independent living, you know, this whole issue of homemakers, you know, probably a lot of it could be addressed if the independent living was funded at a higher level. Is that something that the state directors see as a problem and an issue and are lobbying for Congress to change, or is it something
yes.
that...
Yes, there are efforts to increase the funding for vocational rehabilitation overall, as well as to increase the independent living part of that and the older blind.
Is there any approach being contemplated, like, you know, they're going to start measuring statistically states' performance to give states that are doing a better job more money and penalize this, you know, a carrot and a stick, or is it just a stick that's being contemplated now, or?
Well, the whole formulas of how states get, how it's determined what each state receives is based on population and some of those kind of factors. There are some real problems with the current formula, and that's being looked at. But as far as being, I mean, in a sense, it's tied to the carrot and the stick, because the standards and the indicators require all of us, each state, to live up to certain standards.
And if you surpass those standards, is there a carrot?
Not, no, that, I guess that is not part of the current.
It's more
formula.
A stick. If you don't, if you don't make it, then these are bad things are going to happen.
Yeah, that's
if you
true.
Succeed,
right.
then.
Right. Although, in terms of like the older blind funding, well, now that's formula two. I guess when that was discretionary, it was a little more. Those who were really doing a good job were more likely to continue and have even better funding. But now that's kind of gone back the other way too.
Another thing I thought, just a second, Barb, I'll finish and I'll be done.
Okay, I want to make sure that we give Bob Deaton a chance to say what he has to say before we field any more questions.
Well, I was just going to, on the income level, you know, tracking income, how does the agency, I mean, once people are gone and their case is closed, I mean, do you have access to their income?
I'll let Carlos talk about that.
We, yes and no, because at the beginning,